Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Palestinians say Israel's latest raid on the Al-Aqsa Mosque amounts to declaration of war, urging international intervention to prevent the situation from spiraling out of control. Russian air raids and missile strikes hit Ukraine's capital Kyiv and other major cities as Moscow says it has cleared the entire urban area of Mariupol of Ukrainian forces. Also ahead, North Korea test fires a new weapons system under the supervision of its leader, Kim Jong-un. Hello and welcome. We are coming to you live from the Irani capital, Tehran. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. International reactions pouring in over Israel's violations, including its assault on Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Al-Quds. Iran has strongly condemned the aggression, calling for unity among Muslims to defend the Palestinian cause. Listen.
Deeply outraged by the new atrocities of the Israeli regime, we strongly condemn the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is a reminder that normalization with the apartheid regime of Israel only encourages the oppressor to double down on its brutality. Muslims must stand united behind the Palestinian cause.
Palestinians say the aggression amounts to declaration of war, urging international intervention to prevent the situation from spiraling out of control. Morocco, Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia have strongly condemned the raid, saying Tel Aviv must be held to account. Lebanon's parliament speaker has hailed Palestinians' resistance. Nabih Berri says the occupation of Palestine will soon come to an end. Lebanon's Hezbollah has also strongly denounced the storming of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the, quote, barbaric attack against worshippers. It says the invasion was a serious violation of the sanctity of the holy site. Jordanians also hit the streets of the capital Amman in solidarity with Palestinians. The protesters gathered near the Israeli embassy waving Palestinian flags. Yemen's Asrullah movement has also denounced the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and hailed Palestinians' steadfastness. Meanwhile, the UN chief has voiced grave concerns over the situation in Al-Quds and urged Israeli and Palestinian leaders to avoid further escalation. The European Union has called for an immediate end to violence in Al-Quds. Germany, France, Italy, and Spain have issued a joint statement expressing concern, but falling short of condemning Israel's assault. Russia, however, has slammed Israeli sanctions, or actions, I should say, and criticized the regime for turning the Gaza Strip into, quote, a prison under open sky. Moscow has also blasted what it called the illegal occupation and creeping annexation of the Palestinian territories. And Israel's main backer, the U.S., says it's deeply concerned about the latest escalation and urges all sides to exercise restraint. Activist and political commentator Paul Lurie says the United States' call for restraint on both sides will only embolden Israel to commit more crimes.
Well, the reaction of the United States is predictable, asking for restraint on the part of both the Israelis and the Palestinians. Frankly, I think the time has ended for restraint, at least on the part of the Palestinians and of the allies with Palestinians, and Palestinians in Palestine, Palestinians outside of Palestine, and all those who care about the future of Palestine. Because restraint means empowering the Zionist settlers and occupiers to achieve their end of expelling all the Palestinians and taking all the land for themselves. So, no, resistance is not necessarily the use of restraint. And if the lack of restraint means more resistance, then maybe it's not such a bad thing. This is the problem. What they have to see is that they cannot continue to get away with confiscating Palestinian land and subjugating Palestinians.
Israel's Friday attack on Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds has sparked a wave of angry reactions on social media. People have slammed the international community's inaction to stop Israel's crimes against Palestinians. Hashtag Trending brings you some of those reactions.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here, back with another Hashtag Trending. So tensions have been running high in the occupied Palestinian territory since the beginning of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. And Friday saw an escalation in one of the holiest sites for Muslims all around the world. Just at dawn on Friday, Israeli forces raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and fired rubber bullets and sound bombs at the worshippers there. And as a result of the Israeli aggression, some 150 Palestinians were wounded and hundreds were arrested. The Israeli act of aggression sparked a wave of outrage on social media, with many users pointing out the fact that this is not even the first time that the Israelis attacked the holy site during the month of Ramadan. They also said that Muslims around the world must unite and stand against Israeli apartheid. The first tweet of the day comes from Code Pink. They said, "Every year during Ramadan, the Israeli occupation forces attack Al-Aqsa, one of the holiest sites in Islam. Palestinians defend themselves, Zionists use it to justify Israel's violence. This is the violence U.S. taxpayers fund. Do not look away." Nuha has our next tweet. "Israel has been attacking and killing Palestinians again during the holy month of Ramadan and again attacking the most holy mosque, Al-Aqsa. This apartheid has been for 74 years and is still ongoing. They especially attack during this holy time at places of worship, pure evil." Our next tweet comes from Turgay Evren. He said, "No difference this year. The fate of Masjid Al-Aqsa is the same this Ramadan as well. While we Muslims are busy fighting each other, Israel keeps attacking the worshippers in the first Qibla of Islam. What will bring us to our senses? I don't know." Numerous comments were also posted on social media blaming the West and mainstream media for keeping silent regarding the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. People say that if such an event were to occur at a church or at a temple, it would make headlines everywhere on every major news outlet. Moving on to our next batch of comments, Abiha Zahra said, "I am sorry this is not Ukraine, so the world will remain silent. This is Palestine, where people get tortured by Israelis every day. Where is humanity? Where are human rights champions?" Humanity in Danger has our next tweet. They said, "The Israeli forces attack worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque, injuring 158, arresting more than 400 Palestinians. Imagine if the same thing was done by Muslims in any church or temple. It would be in headlines on every news channel, but who cares, because victims are Muslims, not Europeans." That is the very definition of double standards for you right there. Ismail Patel has our next tweet. "If this was happening to other people's place of worship by an occupying force, it would be all over the news. Are Muslim values worthless? This is more than about Palestinians." That is definitely the case. Some say that the Israeli attack on defenseless Palestinian worshippers and the desecration of their holy site during their holy month, mind you, amounts to an act of terrorism, and the international media has a responsibility to properly cover it and to condemn the attack as such as an act of terror. Moving on to our final batch of comments, Farida Fadil said, "Attacking civilians during their prayers and rituals and defiling their holy places is an act of terror, and whoever does it is a terrorist." Dr. Salman Butt has our next tweet. 50,000 attended Friday prayers in defiance of the annual trend of settlers of the last remaining European colony in the Middle East violently attacking defenseless worshippers in the holy month of Ramadan. Final comments comes from Rebelez. She says, "Israeli terrorists attacking Palestinians in Al-Aqsa Mosque, the holiest site in Palestine for Islamic prayer. No media coverage nor no international media has condemned this attack. If other holy sites were desecrated and invaded like this, we would be seeing world coverage." And that brings us to the end of this edition of Hashtag Trending. Let's head back to the studio for the rest of the world news.
Welcome back. On day 53 of the Russia-Ukraine war, Russian forces strike major Ukrainian cities, including the capital, Kyiv. Moscow says it's attacked Kyiv's tank repair factory. The cities of Lviv, Mykolaiv, and Kharkiv have also been targeted over the past 24 hours. Ukrainian air defenses say they have shot down several Russian cruise missiles near the Polish border. In Mariupol, the tensions seem to be continuing unabated. Moscow says the majority of the city's urban areas are now cleared of Ukrainian forces, and Russian troops are pressing ahead with their advances there. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has once again warned about the worsening humanitarian crisis in Mariupol, saying many Ukrainian soldiers and injured people have been blocked in that area. He says the elimination of Ukrainian forces in the crisis-hit city would put an end to talks with Moscow. Russia has banned 13 current and former British officials, including Prime Minister Boris Johnson, from entering the country over the UK's, quote, unprecedented hostile actions. The Foreign Ministry says the decision is particularly in retaliation for the UK sanctions against Russian officials over the war on Ukraine. It says London has launched an information and political campaign to isolate Russia internationally and strangle its economy. Moscow accuses the UK of deliberately aggravating the situation in Ukraine by sending deadly weapons and pushing its allies and other countries to impose large-scale sanctions against Russia. Moscow's entry blacklist also includes Foreign Secretary Liz Truss, Defense Secretary Ben Wallace, and former Prime Minister Theresa May. In March, Moscow imposed a similar ban against U.S. President Joe Biden. A controversial plan by the British government to relocate asylum seekers who crossed the channel to Rwanda has sparked fierce criticism. Human rights advocates have decried the scheme as shockingly ill-conceived and contrary to international obligations. Earlier in our news review program, we discussed the issue in depth. Let's have a look.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Tehran has decried Britain's announced plan to force asylum seekers residing in the country into migrating to Rwanda. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said the move means the UK is shirking its international responsibilities and obligations and passing the buck to a third country. Saeed Khatibzadeh said the move is also in violation of asylum seekers' rights stipulated in relevant conventions and human rights treaties. Britain announced its plan on Thursday to send some asylum seekers to Rwanda for processing and settlement there. The British government says it aims to tackle people smuggling and to fix its broken asylum system, but opposition politicians and human rights defenders have branded it as inhumane. The UN also said the plan raises human rights concerns. Lee Jasper is a race and equalities activist who joins us from London. Ian Williams is a journalist, analyst, and writer who joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Lee Jasper, let me first start with you. The explanation given by the UK government is that we're going to send them there because we want to process them there and have them live there. Do you buy that, just the justification that the UK is explaining?
No, because it flies in the face of the offer of President Macron to have offshore processing facilities based in Calais, in France. And so this makes no sense. It's a huge attempt at political diversion. Prime Minister is in a very deep hole in relation to him breaking the law along with other senior members of the cabinet. And in order to divert attention away from those recently released news that the Prime Minister is facing a number of fines as a consequence of breaking lockdown rules, we've had this bizarre and left-field announcement. It's a means of trying to exploit racist sentiment that their government thinks is abroad, but which I think actually has been somewhat overturned of late by great compassion and sympathy for Ukraine refugees. And he's completely tone deaf to the needs of the country, notwithstanding the horrific effect it will have on those seeking asylum themselves.
Ian Williams, some of the criticism leveled against the UK Prime Minister treating people like commodities and saying these are neo-colonial aspirations, amongst others. How do you view it?
It's a typical piece of upper-class British callousness to try to persuade people to do different. The aim of this is to dissuade refugees from trying to come to Britain because they might end up in the middle of Africa. And I must point out, everyone seems to have forgotten, that Rwanda, with which Britain has such a cozy relationship now, has actually been indicted over and over for human rights failings, assassinates its opponents at home and abroad, actually sends assassination teams into other countries to kill political opponents of Paul Kagame, the current president. So it's not just any old country. And also it follows a pattern. The Australians did this with Nauru. Nauru, in case you forget, is a small coral atoll that mostly composed of bird droppings, seabird droppings, that was mined out for fertilizer. It's in the middle of the Pacific, and the Australians lent on the government of Nauru to accept refugees under the same conditions. People trying to get to Australia were put onto this desolate, waterless coral atoll and dropped down there. And the old British principle here is least eligibility. The idea is that you dissuade people from asking for government help by making the help so unpalatable that no one will take it.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Ian Williams, journalist, analyst, and writer from New York. Lee Jasper, thank you. Race and equalities activist from London. And with that, we come to an end for this news review.
Moving on, North Korea has test-fired a new weapons system aimed at boosting its nuclear capabilities. North Korea's official news agency, KCNA, has confirmed the test, saying it was carried out under the supervision of leader Kim Jong-un. It called the weapon significant in increasing the efficiency of Pyongyang's tactical nukes. The reported launch comes a few weeks after controversies in the Korean Peninsula over Pyongyang's testing of intercontinental ballistic missiles. With that launch, North Korea ended a self-imposed moratorium on testing such missiles after 5 years. South Korea says these moves escalate tensions and worsen ties between the two neighbors. But Pyongyang says its tests are in response to mounting tensions on the Korean Peninsula triggered by joint military exercises between Seoul and Washington.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and welcome to the program. God said to Prophet Moses, peace upon him, O Moses, he who loves me will not forget me, and he who is hopeful of my goodness will insist on appealing me. O Moses, I am never negligent of my servants, but I like my angels to hear the sound of my servants' whisper. Dear friends, God tells Prophet Muhammad blessings of God upon him and his progeny in Ayah 53 of Surah Zumar to declare on behalf of God, say, O my servants who have committed excesses against their own souls, do not despair of Allah's mercy. Indeed, Allah will forgive all sins. Indeed, He is the all-forgiving, the all-merciful. Sometimes injustice that others have committed against us makes us angry and causes us to utter insults. Often we are not able to control our anger, and this will soon lead to physical fight. This may even result in violence and unintentional murder. Fasting is an opportunity to control conditions and harness our inner forces, not to cause regret. Fasting of the month of Ramadan is a good practice to increase patience and self-restraint, patience against hunger and thirst. While trying to be good-tempered and observing the rights of others will make the individual patient. Statistics indicate that this practice has been highly effective on social behavior in Muslim communities. With the start of the blessed month of Ramadan, crimes and felonies like aggressiveness, street fights, family violence, shop and house robbery, murder and abduction decrease. This truly proves that there is a direct relation between worship of God and reduction of crimes, frauds and felonies. Ramadan is the month of practicing patience, and patience is one of the pillars of faith. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says that faith is like a body and patience is its head. Moreover, over 70 ayahs of the Noble Quran are dedicated to the issue of patience in the broad sense of the word. The Quran always recommends the faithful to be patient and promises unlimited reward for the patient. Ramadan causes the divine light to shine in the hearts and makes people more thoughtful and affectionate to one another. Such hearts will not be aggressive towards others. However, they are very tough and harsh against oppressors. These are the hearts which God describes in Surah Fat as hard against the faithless and merciful amongst themselves. Now, in the second part of the program, we are going to mention some of the things that nullify fasting. These include eating and drinking, ascribing untrue things to God, prophets, and imams, sexual intercourse, breathing thick dust or make that reaches the throat, dipping the head below water, deliberate vomiting, and using enema. If a person intentionally eats or drinks something, his fasting will be nullified. But if he does this unintentionally, his fasting is correct. If the person swallows the food pieces between the teeth, his fasting will be nullified unless he does it unintentionally. If, while eating sahari, the meal before dawn, the person notices that it is time for morning azan or call for prayer, he should bring out the morsel and avoid eating anymore. So, if he swallows the morsel deliberately, his fasting is nullified. If the gum bleeds, it won't nullify fasting provided that the person spits it out. Meanwhile, if he keeps the blood in the mouth so that it becomes thin in the saliva, he can swallow it. Well, in this part of the program, let's hear what Lady Fatima, peace upon her, said on fasting during the blessed month of Ramadan. The dear daughter of the Prophet of Islam and the greatest woman of history, in her famous sermon at the Prophet's mosque in Medina, pointed to the most important deed in Ramadan, namely fasting. She said that fasting stabilizes sincerity and purity of intention. Thus, she says that the core and logic behind fasting is strengthening sincerity. She continues that sincerity is the sign of monotheism and theology. In view of this, the month of the divine banquet is the period in which human being recognizes God better and gains more proximity of God through fasting and other worships. Lady Fatima Zahra, greetings of God upon her, says, "The fasting person who does not keep his tongue, ears, eyes, or organs, what use will have his fasting?" Then she continues that the fasting person has done nothing through fasting if he has not kept them aloof from what is forbidden for them. According to the Prophet's daughter, true fasting is shunning sins and forbidden acts. Basically, any worship has an appearance and an inward. The appearance is what everyone does according to their religious injunctions, but what shapes the inward and helps the individual to reach a spiritual sublimity and perfection are the conditions that make an act of worship pure. This way, our worship will deserve divine reward and will help us attain spiritual degrees.
Food for thought.
Salam. Let us start by listening to some thought-provoking statements from Imam Hasan Mujtaba, peace upon him, on the eve of his blessed birth anniversary. Asceticism is the desire for God-fearing and the abstinence from the worldly pleasures, while clemency is the suppression of one's anger and self-possession.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host, Musa al-Bahadali, and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, you will discuss issues, relevant questions, and other fields regarding the Islamic upbringing of children. And we would like to stress that the answers that we provide in this program are all based upon the narrations of the household of the Prophet and, of course, of the Prophet himself, and upon the Holy Quran, supplemented with scientific research. Joining us in the studio today is our dear friend, Sheikh Ali Himani, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sheikh, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for joining us.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. It's my pleasure to be here in your studio.
Sheikh, last time we spoke about how, again, this phase, the teenager phase in the young adults' lives is a very sensitive phase. They are trying to find out who they are, their identity, and they associate themselves with all different groups and so on and so forth. But Sheikh, what can we as parents do to protect our children from falling in with the wrong people?
So we were mentioning about the switch personality in the previous sessions that, you know,
switch or split personality.
The split personality is a disorder, but switch personality, I don't see it as a disorder. It's more of an effort to fit into different groups and all that. Now, one of the needs of the teenager is to mingle with his own age group because they strike a chord with each other.
Just like young children, where they see another toddler.
Exactly.
Immediate relation.
Like I have two daughters. One of them is 3.5 years and the other one is 7-year-old. My 3.5-year daughter find it very difficult to mingle around and play with 7-year-old girls because their kind of games, they
their
run around.
Maturity, and their thinking,
it's way off. Level. And similarly, my 7-year-old daughter finds it difficult to mingle around and play with 4-year-old girls.
Of course.
And they have a different kind of a game.
Right.
So this teenager, he finds it difficult to be at home and, you know, associate with the level of maturity with the parents.
Older generation.
Different generations. So he finds it much, much more comfortable to hang around with people of his same age group, you know, that about 13, 14, 15. That's the kind of group that they hang around.
Right.
And at one point, this social need takes such a higher position, priority, that he is willing to sacrifice his natural relationships like father, mother, brother, and sister to uphold the relationship with the
His social relationships.
So he's okay to upset the mom and dad, but he's not okay that his friend gets upset, right? Now, this can be looked at from the parent's point of view. This can be looked at as an opportunity and a threat. Which part of it? The need. The need of the teenager to mingle around with other teenagers of the same group.
We can use that to our advantage.
Exactly. So he has an opportunity and he has a threat. The threat is that if we let him loose, we say, oh, my son is mature. He knows who to pick. He knows who to hang around with. I have full faith in him. So I'm just going to let him loose.
Basically dissolve ourselves of any responsibility.
Yeah. Exactly. And then you allow him to go pick and choose. And you should know that he does not have that maturity to
pick
the right kind of
thing. And this happens. Parents did not involve at all with their teenagers' lives.
All the time. On the other hand, they can see it as an opportunity and create the necessary environment. How do they do that? By taking your teenage son and associating them with the right kind of families, taking them to the pious families.
Good friends, families,
decent families where the interaction is happening between the teenagers and they're all well-mannered, well-upbrought children, and this is where you can make sure that my teenage son or a daughter is not falling into wrong company, but hanging out and mingling with the right kind and pious people.
Right. Let's expand on this after a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Sheikh, just before we went on a break, you said that one of the methods that we can employ to ensure that our children associate themselves with the types that you want them to associate with is to take them to good family outings or to find them good friends or help them find good friends. Basically provide a safe environment.
And take them to community centers, take them to like places the mosque or the community center programs where you have the amal going on, the du'a komel going on.
So religious activities, but also fun activities.
The fun activities. Yeah. With the same family members, with the same teenagers, you can plan a good outing. You know, you can go to theme parks, you can go to park and play ball and football and catch and whatever. That can be done, right?
And that's up to, of course, the parents. They must provide this. A teenager himself, he cannot plan such a trip or an outing. He doesn't have the resources or the capacity.
And the authority to plan such a thing, right?
As well, yeah.
So the parents have to be involved into this. Right. And therefore, they should see this as an opportunity that my son has a need to mingle and play around with people of the same age. And this is an opportunity for me to take him and allow him to mingle with the right kind of people.
Of course, ideally, they already have childhood friends by that point.
Yes.
So just use the same good childhood friends.
And sometimes, you know, what happens, if your son falls into wrong company, then irrespective of the fact that you are sending him to the best school, you have some of the best teachers, you're taking them to the community center, you're taking them to the mosque, you're taking them to
clothes, perfume, appliances, doesn't matter.
Nothing matters. Everything goes into vain because he's being conditioned by the wrong company that he's hanging around with.
Right.
They are the ones who are telling him what to do, what not to do, how to behave, how not to behave. Now, how much soever effort you put in, because of that source, one of the dilute or, you know, influenced source, this is causing all the harm to your son. So 80% of effort goes in from you, but because your son or your daughter is in the wrong company, just about 20% effort from their side,
there's
and
no
all
results.
Your 80% is washed off.
No result, unfortunately.
Yeah. I remember, let me tell you my personal experience. I remember some of my friends in the college. When I was in the school, we were classmates, and I saw them being the top performers in the class. They used to be among the top three, top five students.
The best grades.
Straight A's, right? And then once we got into college, and about 3-4 years later, when I met them, they were totally out of hand.
They fell off.
Totally. They're into all kinds of bad habits. I don't want to mention them on the radio, but everything that I thought that they wouldn't do, they had already done it and they were proud about it. And this happened because when they went to college, the parents felt that, oh, my son, he's a good guy, all straight A's. Let him have his freedom because I know he's going to make the right decision.
Right.
And with zero involvement, he made his friends, he made his choices.
It's a completely uncontrolled environment.
And he couldn't even finish the college.
He
dropped out. Actually, he was not interested. You know, most of the time he would be missing from the college and they would be going out to places that I shouldn't be mentioning here at all.
Right.
So I was shocked. And these were some of the Muslim friends.
Friends.
Yeah, forget about the non-Muslim ones. And I was like, what happened to you? You were like the good guys. Like, oh, you're missing out on some great fun. You have no idea.
You're
I said, thank
out.
You. Thank you. You enjoy and I'm good.
You have your fun. I will have my fun, inshallah. Sheikh, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
Okay.
Ya muqiy al-khayrat, ya muqiy al-khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Ya muqiy al-khayrat.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Sheikh, please pick up where you left off.
I was talking about some of the friends that I knew that, you know, when in the school days they were good, and when I went to college and I met them after 3-4 years, they were totally out of control. Rather, there were some of the friends that I had in the college, right at the beginning of the college, and they were different because they had just come from schooling, they finished their O-levels.
Fresh from a controlled healthy environment.
Exactly, O-levels, and they got into the A-levels, they're with me, and I'm like, wow, good friends and all that. After six months, I see them, you know, totally going out of control. Why? Because they just picked one wrong guy, literally one wrong guy to hang around with after the college hours, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, they would spend time with them. And after 6 months, this guy is totally off the track. It's
right, so completely affected.
If it's okay, let me share another example of one of the persons I know, one of the girls who was studying medicine in the college. And, you know, she came to Qom to study Islamic material. And she's like, before I get into my real life, let me come here, study for a couple of years.
Learn about
and understand
Islam.
Understand Islam so that I make sure that when I start my life, my married life,
it's on an Islamic foundation.
On the Islamic foundation, and I follow the methodologies. And then when she was, you know, telling us all the stories of what's happening in the college, boys and girls and everything, and we were literally shocked. And she said, it was so difficult for me to just go to college every day. The fact that I had to get up and go to such an environment was a punishment.
But even in Islamic countries, we have the same issues.
It is there. My point is that the parents have to take care of this scenario. They should know that my daughter, my son is going to school, but the environment of the school is so pathetic, so bad that it's literally punishment. She would say that I would sit in the taxi or the bus going to college, and I would literally cry that I have to get into such an environment. Right. Absolute filth. And they would taunt her for being a hijabi girl, for being a pious religious person and not doing what they're doing, right? And that was such a torture for her. But she protected herself, she safeguarded herself because there was good upbringing from the parents' side.
Right.
And eventually she came here, she learned about Islam, and now she's back into her life, following her career and following Islam. And this is where is my point that I want to emphasize upon, that parents have to step in.
They have to step in at an early age from the beginning, because you said yourself, she was already raised Islamically, conditioned Islamically.
Exactly. Like I said, right from the 6th month.
Because it's too late to try to control them, work on them now. It's gone.
It has to start from the 6th month onwards. You know, you slowly start building upon
it. Well, actually, we start as soon as they're born. We say the Adhan will Iqan.
Exactly.
As soon as they're born.
So
it is a lifelong process.
And today the world is so challenging and difficult, you know, they're promoting the gay concepts and all that stuff.
Harder and harder to be religious and especially for Muslims, God help them, in Western countries. They are attacked on a daily basis by the school curriculum, the teachings that are taught.
The worldview that is being promoted there. So they're constantly
the
under attack.
Political views, they're horrible.
So this is, again, where not just knowing this aspect that my son needs or my daughter needs people of the same age, but also understanding the curriculum in the school and answering the shubhat, the doubts, the skepticism that is promoted.
Misconceptions that often lead to disastrous results.
So the parents have to be ready with these answers. They have to be prepared with these answers so that when the son or the daughter comes home and says, Dad, Mom, this is what they're teaching us at school, they should be able to answer it and justify it and convince the child of the answers.
Allow me to ask you one final question and then we will have to end today's session. And that is, if I am a parent and I live in a country that has such a secular curriculum, for example, that leads to this corruption of faith, should I then logically send my children to universities, or should I rather prefer to take them out?
Homeschooling?
Homeschooling, or even perhaps immigrate to another country?
Look, there are fatwas, there are rulings here about it. If there is an option of homeschooling, I would highly recommend you opt for that.
It's very difficult to university. Exactly.
And homeschooling, particularly at university level, is really challenging. And
exactly,
even distance education from distance learning, virtual. It's going to be virtual learning. It's going to be difficult. On the other hand, the rulings that I remember from Ayatollah Sistani and other Maraji Taqlid is that if you are sending your child, if you're sending your son or daughter to university and they are promoting haram and you're worried that your child might be involved into this haram, then it becomes wajib upon you to migrate to another city, another location. And if the whole country's curriculum is like that, migrate to a country where the curriculum is more congenial and friendly with Islamic ways rather than teaching your child to commit sins regularly.
And keeping that in mind, inshallah, we ask Allah that He protect us from all of these vile influences.
Inshallah, illahi ameen.
I thank you for contributing to this discussion and also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any suggestions, feedback, or some comments, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. Alternatively, you can also visit our website, parstoday.com. You can also find us on various social media websites, such as on Twitter and Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With the light.
Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what she saw for today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. The World of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for 4 beats or 2 beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
I feel like the challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive.
the tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or American Sign Language, in the production. DJ Kurs, the producer at the Deaf West Theater, says the performance is a little bit more poetic and a little bit more kind of picturesque.
A startup in the U.S. state of California is turning science fiction into reality by sending tiny robots on a fantastic voyage inside humans to treat brain disorders. The smart cells are small enough to be injected and can be carefully guided through the brain using magnetic coils placed outside of the patient's skull. The coils are linked to a computer that can remotely maneuver the robots through delicate pathways into the affected part of the brain. The micro-robots are also removed by rewinding them through the same route. The developers at Bionaut Labs say these robots are extremely important when it comes to zero-failure-sensitive surgeries.
For localized conditions such as cancer tumors, stroke, atherosclerotic plaque buildup, localized pain, and many other conditions, there is a real need to have a micro-robotic, precise, remote-controlled mechanism that can treat a condition only at a specific point and nowhere else.
The startup has already tested the robots on large animals. Inventors hope to use the robot to pierce fluid-filled cysts within the brain when clinical trials on humans begin in 2 years. If approved, they could offer key advantages over more invasive and dangerous treatments for brain disorders. Floating solar panels help landowners benefit from underused body of water. Now, a German company is covering 14,000 square meters of a lake with these panels, turning it into the biggest solar park in the country. The park is built by a family-owned company called Quartzwerk, which specializes in extracting and processing industrial minerals. The company says it wants to become independent of fossil energy sources amid rising energy prices. The head of the Floating Panel Corporation says they will be generating around 3 million kilowatts per hour of green electricity on the surfaces of Limmersheim Lake in southern Germany.
The
plant can make a super big contribution to the land-neutral energy transition, because here an unused lake that was previously used for gravel extraction is being converted into a power plant for renewable energy.
Installation and maintenance of the panels are easy and safe, while they also offer a significant reduction in evaporation from the water surface. According to the company, this will save around 1,100 tons of carbon dioxide each year.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A restaurant in the Indonesian capital of Jakarta is taking fine dining to new heights, literally and figuratively, by giving diners a one-of-a-kind experience 50 meters above ground. The restaurant is called Lounge in the Sky. Diners are securely strapped into seats fixed to a table and are hoisted into the air using a heavy-duty lift. First, the gourmet meals are prepared in the main kitchen. Then, the food is loaded onto the platform where the dishes are plated and served to the patrons. The suspended guests are able to take advantage of breathtaking views as they gently rotate at great heights.
At first, it was not easy. I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to swallow the food, let alone drink. But after some time, I could eventually eat. It was thrilling.
While enjoying the meals, the guests use seat belts and the accompanying staff are equipped with safety harnesses. The guests are also briefed on safety regulations before the platform is raised. Diners call the one-hour experience exhilarating and worth the high price. The project developers say the restaurant was aimed at reviving local and international tourism sector after a big slump during the COVID-19 pandemic. The culinary experience is a first in Indonesia and the third in the world after Belgium and Malaysia.
South Koreans are getting outside to enjoy the open air with a local cherry blossom festival in central Seoul. This is while the country has been dealing with an ongoing surge of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. With some performances and the beauty of spring, many people look forward to turning the corner on the pandemic. Frank Smith has a story.
Spring has come to South Korea, and the cherry blossoms are blooming. COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings are finally being eased, and at Ansan Park in central Seoul, a small festival is bringing everyone back out.
I first came here with my friends 4 years ago, but we couldn't come for the past 2 years because of COVID. I was impressed to see so many people no longer being overly careful about COVID, and we're also very happy to be able to attend festivals like this one.
South Koreans have been quite diligent in observing social distancing guidelines and wearing masks. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 has been quite severe here, with cases only recently declining below 200,000 per day. Still, the government's decided to open up. From the open-air stage, Noh Ah Ram and his band entertain a crowd that's anxious to finally get outside and enjoy group activities.
Ever since COVID, and particularly for the entirety of 2021, when the pandemic was at its peak, I have been unable to perform. I felt today was a restart. Spring has come, the weather's great, the blossoms beautiful, and I felt all of this was celebrating today's show.
South Korea's vaccination rate is nearly 90%, with children now getting the jab.
At first, I was very scared of COVID as I felt it was life-threatening. But now I feel okay with it because I consider it an experience and a certain reality. Also, I worry less because of the vaccines and the new medications.
The cherry blossoms blooming has been tracked from Jeju Island in the south and up to the capital as warm weather moved north. And with this change in seasons, attitudes toward life with COVID are changing as well. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The first all-private space crew has successfully docked at International Space Station after spending over 20 hours en route. Three paying customers and a former NASA astronaut will spend 10 days aboard the ISS. The tourists will participate in scientific research, including stem cell experiments and exploring how the body ages in space. The civilian crew were launched into space in a SpaceX rocket from the Kennedy Space Center on Friday. The trip was brokered by Axiom Space, which is the U.S.-based startup that coordinates rocket rides and provides necessary training. It's not the first time paying customers have visited the ISS. Russia sold seats on a Soyuz spacecraft last year. But this is the first mission